Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey guys, so I'm about to bring you my conversation with JBL about the state of the race and the state of swing voters, because that's who we're talking to, and, you know, the 5 months we have to go until this election. But the news gods intervened this week as Donald Trump was convicted on all 34 felony counts in the Manhattan Business Records case after we taped. So this episode doesn't reflect that, but you better believe there'll be an episode about Trump's conviction soon as we catch up with voters and hear how it does or does not affect how they are thinking about this race. So now, my conversation with JBL. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Focus Group podcast. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and this week, with only 5 months to go in the longest presidential election ever, we are taking stock of our punditry. Despite some twists and turns, we've basically known for 3 years that we were likely headed for a Trump-Biden rematch. And frankly, the polls are not where we want them to be right now if you're a never-Trumper like me and my guest. It seems like every Sunday morning we're greeted with another poll showing Joe Biden losing most or all of the swing states. So we're going to take stock of where things have gone wrong so far and what the Biden team might do to fix them, because we are heading into the home stretch. But the most important moments of this campaign are still in front of us. My guest today is my good buddy, best friend, Jonathan V. Last, editor of The Bulwark and my co-host of The Next Level and The Secret Podcast, JBL. Love having you on here, man.
Yeah, I gave you the finger guns. I just holstered it, too. How'd you like that?
You excited? You come to play?
Boy, did I come to play.
Okay.
Oh, did I come to play to talk about these fine Americans who are going to decide the fate of liberal democracy.
Well, we were talking to swing voters from swing states. So these are important folks for Biden to win. And I got to ask you, just level set with me here. You know, Biden got kind of a slight bump coming out of the State of the Union. And Timmy and I did an episode about that back then, if you want to go check that out. But Trump has led this race pretty consistently since last fall. So obviously we talk about this stuff every week. How is this general election, like how it's going, matched your expectations of how you thought it would go?
I've had some cognitive dissonance over this election, and I think I finally begun to sort it out, though, and come up with a grand unified theory of what's happening.
Okay.
My position all along has been that if you came down from Mars and you knew nothing about the polling, all you got to see was objective economic data, you would say the incumbent president should be leading by a minimum of 7 points. If you looked at the unemployment rate, the GDP growth, the real wage growth, all of the indicators, and the fact that it's not matching that, the fact that it's really Trump plus two-ish, I mean, within the margin of error, but you know what I'm saying, means that like something else is going on. So that was my mental framework for this. But I've gone and done a 180, and I've realized we're looking at the wrong polls. the economic data doesn't matter. The head-to-head polling doesn't matter. We should be looking at the feelings data. And if you look at all the feelings data, we got a big poll on this week in which 49% of the country said that we were at a 50-year high for the unemployment rate, and 62% of the country said that we were having contracting GDP and all that. People's feelings are so catastrophically bad that if you, without seeing any objective data or any, you know, head-to-head poll matching data, you just look at the how do people feel about the world. And not about themselves. How do they feel about the world? Because again, one of the things we've seen persistently is when you ask people about themselves, well, how are you doing? They're like, oh, great. Things are good. But how they feel about the world, you would say, oh, the incumbent's getting slaughtered. The challenger is going to win this race. And so my grand unified theory is that we have left a world in which anything matters. And the American people have become wholly untethered to reality. And I'm going to try to prove that case to you guys today, as we interrogate some of the feelings, some people we hear.
Okay, so I'm happy to do that. And we're going to jump into the sound really quickly. But just real quick, you can interrogate the reality of what they're saying. And this is a bit of you and my fundamental disagreement. Mm. But so what? So you are going to tell me all the reasons they're wrong. But like, if they feel that way, isn't the job of Joe Biden and his campaign and the surrogates to help them understand what the objective truth is and try to help them not feel that way?
I mean, they can try, but that's like saying, isn't it your job to make the gravitational force on Earth be 9.2 meters per second when it no longer is that? I just think something has fundamentally shifted in the world, and it may shift back, but it ain't going to shift back between now and November. People have unhooked from political life as we knew it.
Yeah.
And I think part of this is COVID related. I think part of it is that Donald Trump has offered people something like fascism. And it turns out that a lot of Americans like that. And the only reason they hadn't asked for it before is because nobody had offered it to them at the top of a major party ticket. And I just think that a whole bunch of our assumptions about how things work and what different groups of people want and what would turn people off are probably wrong. And I am open to the idea that Donald Trump's understanding of what the American public wants is closer to reality at this moment in American life than, say, mine was as of like 7 years ago.
Okay. I'm going to pick my time where I push back or put my spin on it. But I want to get into the groups, because when we ask about the state of the country, there is some acknowledgement here and there that the economy is getting better. But overall, it was pretty rough. These swing state, swing voter groups, not inconsistent with the polling, but I think alarming for those of us who are thinking about how do you hold the Joe Biden coalition together, or at least the anti-Trump coalition together going into 2024. So let's listen to a recent group of Trump to Biden voters.
I think it's kind of mixed. I think social media has gotten so consuming, and network news media systems are constantly feeding out bad images to make you agree with what they believe is going on. And I think there's been a lot of advancements, but just not at the level that we were expecting coming out of COVID.
The unemployment, I feel, is deceptively misleading. I feel the inflation is a bit out of hand, especially when we're printing money, it feels like, and giving it away. More so, taxes are not being utilized inside the country, but it seems more and more outside. So I find a lot of lack of say in our own government. I feel a lot of who's in power making money versus the everyday person climbing the ladder.
The immigration issue that's hitting Arizona, hitting the whole country. I live in an area, it's called Ahwatukee. It's right at the beginning of Phoenix. And we see hotels that are closed up. The lights are off, but there's cars and cars and cars parked all around it. So they're housing these immigrants in hotels, which they need to stay somewhere, but that's not on my penny. And I don't think we can recover with all of this happening. Biden is trying to create the immigrants that aren't U.S. citizens to vote and to be able to swing that vote across to Biden. They're bringing over T-shirts with Biden on the T-shirts. So they're definitely being influenced from outside. There's just so many issues.
All right. So all these people voted for Biden in 2020. Just going to start with that as you hear sort of their complaints. But I hear this about immigration all the time. To the extent that I tell Democrats, you know, where I think some of these big vulnerabilities are, immigration, I talk about all the time. And you hear it from Democratic voters, you hear it from people in these critical sort of Western states like Arizona, where they are so frustrated about Biden's handling of immigration. And I think Biden can say until he's blue in the face that Trump scuttled the border security deal. But it's hard to say, I think that this administration has dealt with the border well. So how do you make the case to voters like this one in Arizona, right? What should Biden do to win someone like this over?
Well, that gentleman's never voting for Biden again. I mean, that's clear from listening
to
him.
That gentleman was not going to vote for Biden. He was going back to Trump. It's true.
Yeah. And I mean, I would like to see some photographic evidence of masses of people come across the border wearing Biden t-shirts. I was not able to find any of that in my research. Maybe it happened.
Did you find people coming over, though, in large numbers?
Coming over? Sure. People come over. And here's my question for you. And this is a level set. Who was the last American president who handled the border really well?
Yeah, I mean,
because it's never been handled well.
No.
Because it's an impossible situation.
Okay. I don't think that's exactly right. The last time there was real meaningful engagement on the border issue was when the Gang of Eight really made an attempt to have like a real policy
right.
effort.
So but all I'm saying is like, yes, Biden has not handled the border well. Trump did not handle the border well. Obama did not handle the border well. W tried to. Didn't. The reason is because, again, this is an intractable problem because we have a very large border and we are a very wealthy and economically dynamic country. And so people are going to come here. That's just the fact of life. But put that aside. I mean, some of the things, so I've been told not to use their names. So I'm going to refer to these gentlemen by first letters. Mr. A talked about the problem that we are printing money and the taxes are not being utilized inside the country. I don't know if he understands the executive branch does not handle monetary supply. That's a function of the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve takes care of all of that. The policies he's referring to are the quantitative easing policies that were first put forward under the Obama administration and then kept as the zero interest rate policy under Donald Trump, in which the Federal Reserve has since abandoned under Joe Biden, raising interest rates. So this is a thing which Biden does not control and which, in fact, has gotten better under Biden, but which he blames Biden for. And then when he talks about money being utilized inside the country, this is a theme which comes up with a few of the people in the groups, especially with Ukraine aid. They seem to believe that America is putting together big pallets, saran wrapped of $100 bills. Like we're drug dealers and just like flying them in a C-130 over Kyiv and kicking them out the back of the plane with parachutes attached to them. That's not how this works. What happens is we take old stock U.S. weaponry, we ship it over to Ukraine, and then we pay American defense firms to make new stuff to replace it. And those people then pay American workers to do the job of creating those armed systems. This money, it is going directly back into the American economy and American jobs. And again, when people don't understand basics like that, I don't quite know how you reach them.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you how, which is that you give them this information, like you have a messenger that can communicate with them effectively, that can be the one driving the narrative. And when you don't have an affirmative narrative being driven aggressively, other people are able to dominate. To the extent that you're correct that a bunch of these voters are misinformed about the state of things, doesn't change the fact that this is what they believe and that work has to be done to educate them. Like, that's what the work is of campaigns and administrations. And so, like, when you're just like, well, they believe these things and those things are wrong, I'm sort of like, okay, but they're going to vote based on the information they have. And we better get aggressive about giving them different information.
Is it information or is it feelings? That's my question.
Well,
right? And I think
no.
The fundamental question.
They're hearing it from somebody. That guy heard from somewhere that people were coming across wearing Biden shirts, right? Like that's a thing somebody said that he has heard. Here's the thing. I'm just going to stipulate your point that they are incorrect. And yet this is the way they feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to move, keep moving through it. Cause
yeah,
I
keep going. There's,
okay.
Yeah.
So I want to visit a theme that's highly relevant to the work that I do, which is how people think about a second Trump term. And so there's a lot of stuff I want to chew on with you. Let's listen.
I think he's going to go on a revenge tour. Anybody that wronged him, he's going to even probably try to change the terms of the presidency to make it instead of 8 to 16 years so he never get voted out, become more like a dictator. It's sad to say because I'm like in the middle because I don't like what Biden's doing and I'm scared of a second term with Trump, but then I do want to see what he's going to do. I mean, I'm just all over the place in my rationale and who I'm going to vote for this year.
I think he's just going to do what he did last time, just fire a bunch of people in the federal government. It's not anything really that new. The transition's not going to be as great as it was from 16 to 20. It's not going to be great from 20 to 24. It's kind of what you really want from a person when they step into office. They're going to fire a bunch of people and then everything else will be exactly the same.
I think the revenge tour, that's a good descriptor of it. Like, honestly, like, I don't see the terms changing because that's like a process and it hasn't changed how many years of this country being here. So like, it almost like be refreshing to just get it out of the way in a sense with either candidate. Then they're done. And then we can just move on to the next batch.
So that last guy, I think, is kind of sobering because, you know, we talk, I kind of do this thing at the live shows at the end of them where I talk about how authoritarians succeed by wearing us down. And in this case, saying, let's just get Trump over with, you know, I mean, it's hard enough for us to keep our guard up, like you and me, about how dangerous another Trump term might be. And so, like, to ask these voters to, like, stay on high alert all the time, I think is a lot to ask of them. But to be clear, that guy was going to vote for Biden in the end, but not everyone in the group who was making similar points, you know, they weren't sure who they were going to vote for. And I know you want to respond to the woman who suggested that, like, yeah, Trump's going to blow things up and maybe that's good. So go ahead, hit me.
I'm going to come to Miss D last, but I want to talk about Mr. J, who said something very similar to something that Mr. R also said, not in this sound, but later in the group. He said that what's Trump going to do? He's just going to do what he did last time, try to, you know, replace a bunch of people in the federal government. This is what it's always like in transitions. It won't be a good transition. So that is not true. The transition from 2020 to 2021, that presidential transition in which A, the sitting president refused to leave until the final day, B, in which every member of his cabinet was instructed not to cooperate with the transition team of the incoming president, that is historically atypical. It has never happened before. That is not standard operating procedure. This is not just how things go. This is another guy, Mr. R, said when talking about what Trump would do in his second term with replacing people and whatnot, he said, but that's just what Biden did. Joe Biden fired all kinds of people from the military to justice to everywhere to all levels to get his people in. Again, Biden's takeover of the executive branch of the government was totally within historical norms. The transition to Biden was not.
Can I just say what I hear in there? Just as a quick matter, which is, you know, a lot of people in our world talk about Schedule F and how, and isn't it so frightening? And I'm like, voters just think that's what presidents do. They come in and replace people and install the people on their team. Like, that's what I heard from these voters.
And you're never going to be able to explain that to people.
Yeah.
And you are never going to be able to explain Schedule F to people.
That's right. And this is what's interesting about this group is, like, they're even clocking the authoritarian possibilities, but, like, they don't understand why the consequences of that would be bad.
There's another one. Mr. R also said in talking about Trump's second term, he was talking about the attempts to get Trump from the Democratic Party. He said the Democratic Party has gone after him for accusing him of multiple issues and on and on and on. He was never convicted of one thing, and he still isn't being convicted of one thing. I mean, there are three other felony indictments just sort of sitting out here, which he has only not been convicted of because he's been trying desperately to delay him. But also, he was found liable by two different juries of sexual assault and business fraud. Like, those two things just happened like 12 weeks ago. That's a real thing. But back to D, Miss D, I did not read her as saying, yes, Trump would be a dictator and it would be terrible, but maybe things need to be blown up. I did not read that as a, maybe the system is so sclerotic, that, you know, torching it all is the only thing. What I took that as, she has that pause, but then I do want to see what he's going to do. That is somebody who views it as entertainment. And it was just like, I don't know, like the new character on this show that I watched just came in. And that character is kind of interesting. And who knows what'll happen? And the extent to which that is divorced from the understanding that government is a real thing that happens in the real lives of real people, I don't even know how to answer that. Because that is, again, it's the purest distillation of my thesis here. It's all just about feelings. It's just about feelings, man.
Yeah. I mean, I will say this idea of like entertainment, the moderator at one point asked about the debates. And there were a few people who were like, yeah, I'm going to watch the debates to learn something. Actually, this particular person that you're referencing, though, wasn't going to watch the debates.
Miss D was not going to, yes.
Bridgerton was going to be on or something, and who cared about these things. But there was a number of people who said, like, they were going to watch it just, like, because, you know, the good things could pop off. Yeah,
he could
like,
start yelling again.
Yeah.
One of them said that. It was like, you know, last time, remember how he was yelling and screaming over Biden? And he might do that again.
I know it's disconcerting, but I do think it's important just as a way to understand voters about how we're talking about authoritarianism and we're talking about dictatorships and they're talking about like going to get popcorn because this is going to be funny and how lightly many of them carry it.
Yeah. January 6th was a laugh riot.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
So you brought this up, so I want to get through it. I want to get into the legal issues around Trump. We've been taking voters' temperatures on Trump legal news, and I want to pivot away from the flippers for a moment. We recently did a group of 2020 Trump voters in North Carolina. We just released that episode last week about the North Carolina governor's race, if you're interested. But I want to specifically talk about how these voters who are not voting for the Republican governor candidate, Mark Robinson, the Holocaust denying evangelical kind of crazy person, they are voting for Trump again. And I want to listen to how they talked about the New York trial.
Our country right now has so many dishonest politicians that, you know, if the leader has that history, then how are you going to say bad things about, say, somebody running for the Senate or for Congress when the person in charge of the whole country has all this history? So it's like, well, you know, Trump did it and nobody made a big deal about it. I mean, I'm sure there's lots more things that he could be tried for.
Well, it sticks out to me that the Federal Election Commission 10 years ago decided not to pursue this. The attorneys general at that time, New York, D.C., whatever, decided not to pursue this. The bringing in of Stormy Daniels and her sex with the ex-president had nothing to do with the current charges. It was all for theater. You know, that's when I say it's being weaponized. I really think it was inappropriate. And if anybody was following, you know, Michael Cohen's testimony, I think you'll all agree, maybe you've forgotten that you're innocent until proven guilty. Mm-hmm. But according to Michael Cohen's testimony, they haven't nailed Trump yet. Because there's been nothing in any of the emails or phone conversations or anything that's come up through Michael Cohen's testimony that says that Trump told him to do it. I mean, Michael Cohen says he told him to do it. You know, I really thought that there would be solid proof, and that has not come up. And it's interesting because I read about it in the New York Post and I watched The Five on Fox News, and it was like, boy, they're going to throw this case out because of X, Y, and Z. And then I watch it on ABC and it's like they're talking about a different trial. I mean, it's very confusing. If it confuses me, I can't imagine somebody that has no political background or whatever.
To me, it's a distraction, white noise kind of thing. I'm not saying that he's not guilty of a lot of things, but I do think that they are focused in on it. And a big part of me says if it was anybody else, it would have never been taken to trial. It's just a big distraction right now. And it's just, it is not going to matter to me. He's the one who's going to be the nominee. I think he's the one who can turn the economy and the inflation around. And he's got my vote. So everything that's going on, all of his indictments, they really don't bother me. I think Stormy Daniels was a joke up there.
And I'll just say, if you listen to the North Carolina episode we did, these people were so down on Mark Robinson for being a crazy man. So these are not just irrational people. Like, they were judging Mark Robinson as absolutely too extreme and out there. Do you have something you definitely want to say, or can I turn to the flippers about the trial?
I would just like to say two things quickly, if that's okay.
Yes.
Miss S, who is the lady who said that it sticks out to her, the Federal Election Commission 10 years ago decided not to pursue this, the attorney generals, first of all, this wasn't 10 years ago. This all happened in 2016. But you said the attorney generals decided not to pursue it. So the reason no criminal cases were pursued against Donald Trump is because he was the sitting president, and you can't do a criminal proceeding against a sitting president. Again, it's not a question of better information. That's not what this is about. I mean, there is one key difference between Donald Trump and Mark Robinson. I don't know if you'd noticed.
Is it the color of Mark Robinson's skin?
It might be. I mean, who could say? I don't see color. So when sure. I see Donald Trump and Mark Robinson, they look the same to me.
Right.
But it seems possible to me that other people in Republican world might. Who can say? I mean, I don't want to peer into the hearts of others.
Well, this episode led me to one of my more worrying observations that I've had in a long time. I talked about it a little bit on The Next Level, which is just that, look, Mark Robinson is extremely out there, and he is like a Holocaust denier. Mm-hmm. Now, Trump has only dined with Holocaust deniers. So, yeah, you know,
totally
I don't
different.
Know if it's...
who among us hasn't?
I think the fact that he's got Jewish grandkids, Jewish son-in-law, I think Trump's celebrity. I don't know. There's a whole bunch of ways in which Trump is able to elide some of his more despicable beliefs about people that just like other people can't. Anyway, I want to go though to...
Can I say, we're going to highlight this again when we talk about this group's feelings about Kamala Harris.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think, again, provide another data point as to why they might see Donald Trump differently than they do Mark Robinson. That's all I'll say on that, just to see the ground.
Okay. Now, let's listen to how the flipper group, these Trump to Biden voters, talked about the cases generally.
All of them are red flags in my mind, just because it shows the kind of person that he is and like what he does behind the scenes. Like, I don't look at it as white noise. I look at them as like, at least from what the information that I've read and presented with through social media and whatnot. And it just, all of them, I guess, is the answer for that.
If anyone thinks that Trump or Biden will ever face a conviction and sit a day in prison, there's another thing coming. I would guarantee it, put my entire legal future on the line and say that if Trump was convicted, Biden would pardon him the very next day. Because that's just how this big boys club works.
It's kind of a standard with everything, you know. And from movie stars to anyone that faces the camera, they get some sort of immunity. And that's not right. There should be one standard across the country, but that will never happen.
The mishandling of classified documents stands out the most for me. I mean, I'm paying attention to all of them. I have mixed feelings about it because I do believe that there is a degree of witch hunt happening that, you know, the opposition needs to find something to stick. So let's throw as much as we possibly can at him. Having said that, I'm not naive to think that Donald Trump is not capable of doing terrible things, you know, misrepresenting numbers, paying off people, all of those things. I'm just paying attention to all of them.
Even if some of this is a witch hunt, not all of it is. You know, there's a little bit of truth in every lie. And so why would we want to vote for somebody that's being attacked and accused of so many things? We want that individual running our country. Yeah, he's a shrewd business person. He got where he is, where he was, by being a shrewd business person, not caring about others and finding every loophole possible. You know, and that's what he's doing in court as well. It's what his attorneys are doing.
So it's clear in the aggregate, this isn't the most serious case to people. But it's still a good example of why Trump's character is beneath the presidency. George Conway and I talk about this all the time on the Legal Podcast. So do you think a guilty verdict matters at the margins?
I was really surprised by this group and the extent to which people took the Stormy Daniels election fraud case much more seriously than I would have imagined. You know, when we talk about this, we always say this is the least serious of the four. There are many people who thought it shouldn't have even been brought and it was unhelpful that it was brought. I mean, not everybody. It wasn't universal. But most of the people who had any thoughts about Trump's indictments being problematic thought that this case, the election fraud case, was really important and that it was important because of like fraudulent financial records. That mattered to them a lot. And I was really surprised by that. Now, maybe there is some latent bit of that hanging around out there in public opinion that just hasn't been seen yet. Nobody's touched it yet. But I mean, maybe saying that John McCain isn't a war hero will cause something, right? Maybe saying that he has sympathy with the neo-Nazi protesters in Charlottesville will cause something. Maybe January 6th riots will cause it. This is why I'm a little nervous about saying, don't worry. So Mr. B, who was the last person you heard on the sound there, who was a flipper. So he voted for Trump in 2016, then voted for Biden in 20. And he is one of your classic Trump voters. He says, I voted him into office in 2016 because I thought, okay, our country should be run as a business. Let's put a good business person in there that has done something. But now, I'm slightly editing this, condensing this. After putting him in the public light for his first term and through Biden's term, he is the most unethical business person I know, and I would never work for him.
Yeah, that guy was going to vote for Biden.
But you see why he got there, right?
Yeah.
It was from the, I want a business person running the government. And it wasn't like, oh, I was wrong. We shouldn't have a business person. It was actually this Trump guy is very, very bad news.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting, combined with the extent to which most of the people thought that the Stormy Daniels election fraud case was very serious.
Yeah.
Did that surprise you?
I do think that listening to the swing voters, and I've listened to them, they're not following the cases like super closely, but they know enough about them to be like, yeah, and this guy is like, he's a criminal. And if he's convicted, I think it makes a difference at the margins for somebody. I think it pushes people. Look, this is a campaign where you got these double haters. Which guy do they hate more? And so everything you throw on the pile for Trump is a little helpful at the margins of disqualifying Trump in these voters' minds who don't like either guy, but at the end of the day, like, kind of think Trump's too dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, in this group, I guess the good news is 5 out of the 8 voters in one of the main swing voting groups you listened to, we did several, but, and this is pretty consistent across these swing voting groups, the majority of them were going to vote for Biden again. 3 were going to vote for Trump.
Yeah.
But the bad news is those people voted for Biden last time and they are backsliding. Like these are the Biden backsliders that are.
You can't lose 28% or 27% or whatever it is of those people.
And I don't want to treat the focus groups like polls. I just do want to treat them, though, as a data point where we're talking to a lot of swing voters and we've been seeing backsliding now for more than a year among these voters who voted for Biden. And some of them, like we have one guy said he wished he hadn't, but for the most part, it's not that they wish they hadn't. They just like, no, this was worse than I thought. Okay.
Can I just say one more thing, though?
Yeah.
Boy, don't sound so disappointed. I want to believe, like you, that a guilty verdict matters. But if a coup didn't matter, this is what stops me, right? I mean, again, he attempted a coup.
They've been told it wasn't a coup. I mean, this is where you and I obviously are so different. Listening to them, I can hear the information that they're getting. I know what they're getting just barraged with. These are center-right voters, and they are in center-right or like right-wing ecosystems. They swim in sort of a soup of Trumpism culturally. And like everybody they know is like, what about Black Lives Matter? And like it has dwindled over time, the severity of what they think happened that day.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.